sound you hear is not boning. That's actually the fan. All right.
Hello.
Episode 56. We're finally through the Halloween season. November 6th, 2017. How was Halloween?
It was great. Nice and cool. It wasn't too hot.
Get you some candy?
Always.
How are the kids?
Too much. They're very well. My son actually is taking the lead this year, where he's going to be doing the dress up with my daughter instead of me. So
nice.
It's pretty cool. He's kind of carrying on the tradition that I started when he was two. So dressing the theme with the trick or treater, and he's having a good time, man.
Good.
That's what it's all about.
Are they still shell shocked from swine at the Halloween show?
I never played the recording for you, I don't think. Because when my daughter and my son came and sat at the table.
Oh, I heard that whenever.
And so I went and hit record on the laptop just to pick it up. And it sounds like a horror movie because she's just there going, I'm so scared. I'm so scared. All of a sudden you hear the chainsaw go off and her scream.
Well, they were sitting on the couch outside between the two rooms, mm-hmm. and just kind of people watching and just taking a break, I guess. They were just sitting there. And Swine walked up and just like hit the button on his chainsaw and kind of was like, and got them both. I mean, they both jumped out of their chair and like squealed. And they're like, her, she was wearing her Naruto
costume,
her blonde wig.
Yeah.
And so to look at his daughter, she's dressing her costume. So she's got a blonde, short haired wig on. And you can't tell that her hair is actually long underneath the wig.
Right.
Well, she got so scared the wig popped off and her hair popped out. It was awesome.
It was weird. Is it, for whatever reason, Swine just got to her. And
he was creepy, man.
Today she wrote to me. She was asking, are we going to Red Rum Haunted House this Friday night? And I was like, yeah, of course. We're going to go hit it up. Because it was just, for whatever reason, Swine was the one that did it to her.
He's a scary dude.
Oh, yeah. Very menacing.
Awesome. Well, here we are, episode 56, again, November 6th, 2017. We're a week out of Halloween, which means it's time to start planning for next Halloween. So, we're going to skip over some of the normal post-Halloween recap stuff. Just, we've been pretty much ankle-deep, knee-deep, and then neck-deep in Halloween for like the last... since June, basically.
Yeah. We're going to take a break for a couple of weeks and start planning the next event.
That's it. So we're actually already planning the next event. It's just getting people... We're talking to people. We're like, hi, we'd like to talk to you about our next event. And they're like, already? I'll call you back in a week. So anyway, we're gonna do what kind of a throwback episode. You remember the show Unsolved Mysteries? We do.
I used to love that show. Robert Stack was the man, dude.
We're going
to
talk about it. But first, new business.
Yes.
Old business.
Old business first.
Yeah, old business first, new business next. On this date in 1528, shipwrecked conquistador Cabeza de Vaca becomes the first known European to set foot in the area that would become Texas. We learned a lot about him when I was in junior high. In junior high, we had to take Texas history, and he basically started Texas history.
Right.
But yeah, he crashed and just wandered all over the place and took notes and, you know, chronicled things. But all of his exploits and accomplishments were kind of thrown to the side by a whole bunch of junior high school kids realizing that Cabeza de Vaca means head of the cow. Mm-hmm. We're all laughing. How can you take this guy seriously? Did he wear a cow hat? Like, what's up with that? This date in 1860, Abraham Lincoln was elected the 16th president of the United States of America. On this date in 1861... Jefferson Davis was elected president of the Confederate States of America. They didn't like him much, that whole Abraham Lincoln guy.
No. I saw the Goodwill all of a sudden copies of Abraham Lincoln Vampire Slayer been popping up. Like crazy, man. I can't watch it though. I've heard terrible things about it, so
yeah.
I'm kind of leaving it on the shelf.
I think it, well, obviously it's a good concept because people are making a lot of money doing it, you know, like with Pride and Prejudice and zombies and stuff like that. But I don't get into that like crossover fandom type stuff. Like, it doesn't bug me, but it's just kind of like you see like somebody crosses over Snow White with Breaking Bad, so they'll have like a Snow White dress with kind of like the chemical outfit, and it'll be like Snow Walter White or so like that. It's clever, but nah. I'm just not down. So, in this date in 1944, plutonium is first produced and quickly used in the Fat Man bomb on Nagasaki. Kaboom. Notable births on this date in 1946. Forrest Gump's mama, Sally Field.
Sally Field. Frog. Frog from Smokey and the Bandit.
Yeah. Listening to Hail Ming Power Hour. For those of you who don't know, Rick from Hail Ming had to take a little step back from the podcasting scene. So this was his last episode on... but they have a segment in their show called What Did You Watch?
Yeah.
And they'll talk about, you know, whatever they just happened to watch. And so Danny said that he just watched all of the Friday the 13th movies from beginning to end. That's because he just felt compelled. He
watched a couple days.
Yeah. And Rick was like, I watched this movie that I'd only seen parts of and I'd never seen it all the way through. And it's about this guy who's driving a Camaro and he's got a buddy who's driving a truck and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And Danny's like, are you talking about Smokey and the Bandit? He's like, no. That's one I've seen a dozen times. This was Smokey and the Bandit Part 2. It's just like...
There was an elephant popped up.
Yeah. It's like they didn't do any bridge jumps because there was an elephant in the back. This date in 1948, Glenn Frey of the Eagles. We talked about him with... because he died in 2016. He was on that long. Right. The Eagles are really good at writing really good songs that I don't want to listen to. Every time an Eagles song comes on, Big Lebowski pops in my head. Like, I hate the fucking Eagles, man. It's date in 1970. Mr. Ethan Hawke. Happy birthday to you. Shouldn't have pissed off Uma Thurman, man. Sorry, bro. And on this date in 1972, Rebecca Romijn, no longer Rebecca Romijn Stamos, but Rebecca Romijn played, really the only role she's ever played is Mystique in the X-Men series.
Okay.
Which was quickly overshadowed and overcast by Jennifer Lawrence's performance of the same character.
Okay.
Notable deaths, nobody died today. I mean, some people did, but nobody we're
talking about today.
Right. And that is it for old business. What you got for new business?
I got a little bit. Question that you probably don't know the answer to, but I'm going to throw the question out there to lead into the actual story. But do you know who was the first African-American man to play the Phantom of the Opera on Broadway?
I don't.
Well, we're going to wish a RIP to the man that did, Mr. Robert Guillaume.
Mr. Benson, I just read that a little while ago.
Robert Guillaume, his horror connection is he was the first African American to play the Phantom of the Opera on Broadway. He was a phenomenal actor. I remember Robert Guillaume from way back when I was young, from Benson.
Oh, yeah.
First introduction to him, but he's been in a slew of movies. He always had a nice comedic twist to his acting, even though he was very serious all the time. He was a classically trained actor. He has passed away. He is no longer with us. He was also in Soap. He won a Primetime Emmy for Soap in 1979, then he went on to Benson, and then some of his resume includes The Lion King, Spy Hard, Outer Limits, and the 2002 horror film The 13th Child, actually. He was in that as well.
Wow.
So, RIP to Mr. Robert Guillaume.
You know, you mentioned how he's got a comedic element, but he's also a serious actor. Mm-hmm. stumbled, just got down a internet wormhole, and it was one of those things. It was like on Mental Floss or something. It was talking about Jim Varney, who was Ernest P. World.
Yeah. Hey, Vern.
And it's a weird thing because they've got a video of him, and he was a classical actor, and he did a lot of Shakespeare. So you've got him in like this cloak, and he's doing either Hamlet or Macbeth, one of the two, and he's got the heavy accent, and he's extremely nuanced, and it's a chilling performance. But then you see his face, and you're like Ernest. But yeah, it turned out like basically he and a friend of his, the friend was an ad man, and they did a whole lot of local and regional spots.
He used to do commercials in Louisiana for local places all the time.
Right. Well, he did local commercials nationally.
Right.
So he was the character, and then they would hire Ernest out to go do commercials. Said that sometimes he'd record like 12 or 15 commercials a day.
Wow.
For different things.
It was catchy and everybody enjoyed it.
Yeah. And that basically, when Hollywood came calling, he was the most popular ad man that didn't belong to an agency. He was completely independent. He and his buddy were completely independent. And so then Hollywood came calling, and they're like, we want to make a movie out of this. So they could just pretty much write their own check. And right. But he was like,
everybody knew Ernest.
Everybody knew Ernest. He, like, but he always wanted to do serious acting, but he couldn't because Ernest, like, they didn't even realize that there was a Jim Varney.
Right.
Ernest was just the guy.
Yeah. You know?
So it's crazy how some people can transcend their characters and stuff. Like one certain person we'll talk about in this episode can do a lot of things. But anyway.
Well, on that note, also another classically trained actor, I'm not going to say he got pigeonholed, but he kind of found his niche, Robert Englund.
Mm-hmm.
Classically trained actor, became Freddy Krueger, and it will be Freddy Krueger for the rest of his life. Well, in a recent interview, Robert Englund pretty much put the kibosh on any thought that he will ever play Freddy Krueger ever again.
He said it was because of his back, right?
Yeah. His exact quote is, I'm too old to do another Freddy now. If I do a fight scene, it's got to be real minimal because I can't snap my head for 8 different takes at different angles. My spine gets sore, I can still be mean and scary, but I'm mostly relegated now to sort of Van Helsing roles, old doctors and shit. So it's fun that the last moment of me ever playing Freddy is a wink to the audience. From Freddy versus Jason, when his head was cut off and Jason's carrying Freddy's head, all of a sudden he does a little wink to the camera.
Yeah.
Given the hint that he may possibly one day return, but he's pretty much stuck a fork in it. He's done.
He's had a good run.
Oh, no doubt. He will always, no matter what, he will always be Freddy Krueger.
Absolutely.
No matter what they do. And on a final note, I showed you the painting earlier of the Anguish Man.
Yes.
Which was very interesting. If you don't know what the Anguish Man is, look it up. You can search it. It's considered one of the most haunted objects in the world alongside the Annabelle doll and the Dibbuk box, which is another one that is considered very haunted. According to legend, the Anguish Man was created by an unknown artist who mixed the paint with his own blood. And shortly after his work was completed, he committed suicide. It ended up in the hands by a gentleman named Sean Robinson from England. And he inherited it from his grandmother, and his grandmother warned him, this painting's cursed, you know, don't display it or anything. But he was always fascinated with it, so he never threw it away. He kept it in the basement. They had a flood one day, so he decided to pull it up from the basement and hang it, you know, up higher so that the basement wouldn't flood and get destroyed. All of a sudden, things started happening in the house. I think this was in 2011. It was 2010. That's when he brought it upstairs. 2011, he started uploading these YouTube videos of things that would happen in the house since he had put the painting upstairs. And there's like time-lapse videos that cover like a whole night for, you know, 4 hours, but it's only a 3-minute video. But you can see doors opening and closing, loud noises suddenly happening. And one of their family actually got pushed down the stairs and got hurt by something unknown. So he threw it back in the basement.
Yeah.
Immediately. But it's been featured on Discovery Channel, a few other places, and he's actually going to be doing he signed to do a movie about the painting itself. So we got that to look forward to. But it's an interesting little history behind the painting you may want to check out. So
definitely.
Just remember the Anguished Man. It's a very, very disturbing painting. It looks like someone that was burned. You know, just the skin, no lips, no eyelids, nothing. It's just, it's like a man that's in tremendous, tremendous pain.
I would do it to you.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. So that's it for our new business.
New business.
For now.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to get back into it with some unsolved mysteries.
Yes.
The house looks just like the one next to it. And the one next to that. And the one next to that. A young couple live in it.
Give Ken a kiss.
You are so unlucky.
With their three children. And something more.
Sweetie,
remember last night? Do you remember when you woke up and you said you were here?
Uh-huh.
Well, who did you meet? Who's here?
TV people.
Something's funny going on here next door.
We were wondering if maybe you had experienced any disturbances lately.
What kind of disturbances?
I don't know whatever's over this house.
Now Steven Spielberg crosses a frightening new threshold into a world within our own. Its form is revealed.
What is it?
Its focus is clear. And the games are over. Poltergeist. It knows what scares you.
And we're back.
Yes, we are.
And we're going to discuss unsolved mysteries. But not unsolved mysteries like UFOs and if there's a child's slave camp on Mars. We're talking about the show Unsolved Mysteries that used to pose the question, is there a children's slave camp on Mars?
Yes, starring the phenomenal Robert Stack. And that show, when I was a kid, just creeped me out. I couldn't wait to see what they were going to talk about. And, you know, the cruise ship I used to work on was actually featured in Unsolved Mysteries once.
Oh, wow.
It was one of the ghost stories that they had. It was about the ghost that we had on our boat.
Cool.
The ghost of Mary Green. Unsolved Mysteries debuted in 1987, lasted through several incarnations, including a couple of really ridiculous ones. It was Unsolved Mysteries' first few years that fans remember most fondly. You know, at that time, sitcoms were real big, and this was pretty much one of the first reality shows that I remember watching. You know, I wasn't into 60 Minutes or anything like that, and it was Unsolved Mysteries is what I used to watch to get a little dose of reality. And reality was always scarier than movies to me.
Well, of course.
And this brought it to light, just seeing some of the stuff that would go on.
Well, and the cool thing about Unsolved Mysteries is it had that... They would talk about real unsolved mysteries like kidnappings and murders and stuff, but they'd also talk about, you know, Bigfoot and cryptozoology.
Yeah,
and
ghosts and
haunts,
yeah.
And stuff like that. So anything that was literally an unsolved mystery was on the table as far as they were concerned. And they treat it all with the same sort of seriousness. So, you know, especially to a kid, and, you know, in 1987. So that would have made me like 11, 12 years old, you know, sit there glued to the TV like, oh my God.
Right.
There's a legitimate, you know, I don't want to say they're legitimate, but there's a news-ish type segment
right. That's...
That's covering this kind of stuff with all of the information and pictures and video and eyewitnesses, you know, and it made it a lot more realistic than reading it in the book and stuff
like that.
Right,
because they had video, they had pictures, they had interviews with people that had witnessed stuff. It was it just made everything seem real.
It lasted 14 actual seasons, but it actually went from 1987 to 2010, officially with a little break between 2002 and 2008, but it was in reruns. So it's one of the longest running shows in television history that's never been off the air. At some point, Unsolved Mysteries is on some channel somewhere.
Right.
Again, they brought it back from 2008 to 2010. It's been in reruns, but now they're still on YouTube, and Unsolved Mysteries has a website that you can go to, and you can upload or, you know, send in your own unsolved mystery, and they'll produce a little snippet about it, and they'll post it. It's pretty neat.
Yeah, it is cool. You know, I remember the music was kind of X-Files-ish. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just the theme song, Unsolved Mysteries. You got ready to see something creepy.
Oh, for sure.
As soon as you heard it.
Well, and then Robert Stack's voice.
Yeah.
I mean, he sounds like a grizzled old cop. Like, I've seen all this stuff, and again, just his diction led a gravity to it that made it all the more real. And a lot of the stuff that they talked about was real. I mean,
yeah, it was true crime events.
Exactly.
You know, you have shows now like Forensic Files reruns and stuff that do the same thing, but nobody did it like Unsolved Mysteries. Mm.
It's what they call infotainment these days, because everything needs to be either hyphenated or squished together. Did you know in one of the earlier episodes, a young Matthew McConaughey?
Yes,
one of his first roles.
Is it, according to IMDb, it is his first role.
Is it his first role?
His first role ever was it was the story of the. I got it here somewhere. Yeah, Matthew McConaughey did star in one of me. I think his brother got killed in it, if I'm not mistaken.
Bill Moseley, old Chop Top himself.
Yep.
Brent Spiner.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't look up what episode he was in. I just saw notable actors. They didn't have a tremendous amount of notable actors. I do know, and I don't know if this is absolutely true or if it's just urban legend, but I do know there was like an Unsolved Mysteries episode that came out, and apparently one of the actors who was doing the reenactment, he was the bad guy, mm-hmm. He's just an actor. But then somebody saw him and reported him, and the police picked him up, and he's like, no, it wasn't me. Like,
I was on the show.
Yeah, I got my script and everything. Like, 580 episodes, 7 special episodes, and 4 spinoffs.
Wow.
Star Trek is really the only thing that comes to mind that's got that many branches out of the original series,
right.
that just keeps it going.
But and think again, of all the shows that probably came from Unsolved Mysteries, you know.
Well, like you said, Forensic Files. Probably Dateline and all those new shows at the end.
Right, and I was actually thinking, what's the one, America's Most Wanted? It's very similar in the way it's set up. Because Unsolved Mysteries covered the same type of stories and everything.
Right.
As America's Most Wanted. Rescue 911 was another one that came up. Do you remember that show?
Oh, yeah.
One of my high school buddies was in that show. He had saved somebody from drowning who got stuck in a hot tub or something. And he that was the big thing when we were in high school. We had a friend of ours on Rescue 911.
I remember, it was one of those reenactments where some girl gets her hair caught in the drain on a hot tub,
mm-hmm.
And I was like, always just that terrified me, and then I read that Chuck Palahniuk story called Guts. Have you heard of that?
No.
It is really, really bad. But the long and the short of it is, this dude decides that the suction at the bottom of the pool is a way to get off. But instead of sticking his wang into it, he sits on it.
Well, there was a scene in Final Destination 2 where that happened to somebody.
And pulls his guts out through his
and
ass.
And came up through the pool pump, like where the little discharge is, the cartridge filter, where the clear glass is. All of a sudden, his guts started flying up into the
thing. That was same guy who wrote Fight Club. Always just looking for another new way to hit a new low. Which, to be fair, I loved his books. I read them. I think I've read everything that he's written. So I'm not knocking him. But man, Chuck Palahniuk, he submitted one of his first books for publication, and it got sent back, and they're like, "That's too offensive. We can't print that." So he's like, "Oh yeah, how about this?" And he wrote Fight Club, and they're like, "Oh yeah, that's awesome." but Fight Club was like 10 times worse.
Fight Club is a classic movie, man.
Yeah.
It is a great. People have tried to redo that style, and just to no avail.
Yeah.
You can't touch it.
No. Early David Fincher with Nothing to Lose.
Right.
He had a great source material.
Great cast.
He had an all-star cast, and he could do anything he wanted because the studio didn't care. So.
Because Brad Pitt is an actor that I can't not like.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to, because he's like in that upper echelon of Hollywood that sometimes gets jaded, and I don't care for a lot of them, mm-hmm. but just his acting ability is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Seven. I loved him in Seven. I loved him in 12 Monkeys. 12 Monkeys was just his acting, yeah. That was phenomenal, man.
He's always been, I always thought he was underrated because he was so popular.
Yeah.
I always thought he was just really, really good at what he did. But yeah, he got outshined by his own good looks and popularity, yeah. Which I guess if you're him, you're walking around being like, well, you know, I can have literally anything on the planet that I want, so take your Oscar and I could go buy all the gold statues I want.
I buy kids like it's Halloween candy. What about.
So what are some of your favorite Unsolved Mysteries episodes?
My favorite ones were definitely the cryptozoology stuff. Just because as a kid, I was fascinated by Bigfoot, and I wanted to believe in it so bad that, you know, anything that gave me weight to my argument that it existed, I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
So those are my favorite. The murders and everything just kind of creeped me out big time. And the alien abductions as a kid, I liked a lot. I was always hoping that I'd end up being one.
Yeah, I always liked the cryptozoology stuff too. I always, you know, we talked about it on a couple of our cryptid series of that. You know, the world is full of mystery, and again, not being anti-science, but kind of being anti-religious science, where they're like, oh, well, this thing is extinct because we say it is, and then they end up pulling one out of the ocean. Or, you know, it's like, that's always like, booyah, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to prove otherwise. Like, I'm not trying to, you know, like, to prove that light doesn't exist or something. Like, that's not the thing, but it is always nice whenever you've got these stuffed shirts that are all so high and mighty, and they know something's true because some peers were trying to impress them and wrote what they thought that they would like, and then real life shows up and they're like, oh crap.
Man, it's always fun to have it happen that way. Okay, one of the more famous episodes which I ran across, I decided to go ahead and search some of the just the wild, because there's so many episodes, it's hard to remember all of them. There's some of the craziest episodes that they had. And one of them is a story of a lady named Cindy James from British Columbia. In June 1989, she was found dead in the yard of an abandoned house. 44-year-old nurse Cindy James, she had been drugged and strangled, and her hands and feet had been tied behind her back. They thought her death was either an accident or a suicide. And apparently there's a lot of history behind Cindy. She had graduated from nursing school in 1966 and became an administrator for preschool children with behavior and emotional issues. She was married, did not have any children of her own, and just lived a kind of normal life, working day to day. Then, all of a sudden, in July 1982, she and her husband separated. 4 months later, she began receiving mysterious and sometimes threatening phone calls. During the next 7 years, she reported nearly 100 incidents of harassment. 5 were actual violent physical attacks, while others were whispering to silent phone calls. And everything got worse once she called the police. At night, she heard prowlers, her porch lights were smashed, her phone lines were severed. According to one of her friends, bizarre notes began to appear at her doorstep. Someone was basically trying to scare her to death, just trying to freak her out. She became reluctant and frightened to give details, and over time, the police began to doubt her stories, because there was just so much stuff happening that they weren't getting any other evidence, and you know, there was nobody being caught. They just thought that, you know, she was just crazy. In 1983, her friend dropped by her house for a visit, knocked on the door. There was no answer. She assumed she was taking a bath. As she investigated, she came across her outside, crouched down with a nylon stocking tied tightly around her neck. She'd gone out to the garage to get a box, and someone had grabbed her from behind. All she saw were white sneakers. She didn't see who it was that had grabbed her. She moved to a new house, painted a car, changed her last name, and decided to try to hide out. And she hired a private investigator to try to figure out what was going on and who it was that was harassing her. Police continued their investigation, questioned her several times. The detective she hired reported that she wouldn't tell them the entire story. She would be invasive, withhold information. She was scared to give too much because she was scared that this person didn't want her contacting the police. Every time she contacted the police, it got worse. And she would not act as a normal victim would. The police gave her a polygraph. Examiner claims she was withholding information. Her mother thinks the reason her daughter's reluctance was that her attacker had threatened her sister and her family. By naming him, her family would be killed. So she was... And then things just kept getting worse. Police weren't believing her. They thought she was crazy. And next thing you know, she turned up dead. Mm-hmm. Pretty wild story. And to this day, they have never caught her. The case was first aired in February 1991. It's also been profiled in The Current Affair and other media publications. But there's pictures of just some of the notes that, that the guy left. And I mean, it was just creepy as hell, man.
Yeah.
Imagine somebody stalking you and trying and saying they're going to kill you and you can't get any help. The police are no help whatsoever.
That's when you roll on down to Guns R Us and then you make a quick slide around Ammo Is Us. You swing into Quick Draw Holsters R Us. Yeah, I mean... Whatever, there are ways to dispatch of that crap.
Right. One of the more famous stories that came from Unsolved Mysteries was the Allagash abductions, which is one of the alien abduction stories that they had. And basically, sum it up, four guys that decided to go camping in the wilderness of the Allagash waterway, build a fire one night, and go out for a late night canoe trip. They notice a light in the sky that begins to follow them. Naturally, they freak out. They end up on shore with foggy memories of what they agreed to have been only a 20-minute excursion, only to find out that the huge campfire they built all night had burnt out. So they were apparently gone for hours. They spent the next 10 days camping and discussing what they believed to be a UFO and left it at that. As time passed, each began to have nightmares of being abducted and examined thoroughly by aliens in a freaky-ass futuristic sky lab. They came together to undergo hypnosis and find that their individual recollections matched. So under hypnosis, they all came up with the same story of what had happened. So the hypnotist tells them they are each exhibiting signs of a classic abduction experience. From the excerpts of their actual hypnosis sessions, it is something awful that involves being stripped fully nude and forcibly and intrusively examined in front of your helplessly sedated friends. So not exactly a fun night on the camping trail.
No.
Robert Stack weighed in on the Allagash abduction as either the greatest hoax in human history, unprecedented mass hallucination, or perhaps the single most important event since the dawn of civilization, according to Robert Stack. But I mean, think about it. All four guys were hypnotized, and they all gave the exact same story.
Right.
So it wasn't something that they couldn't get together to fake that.
Collaborate, yeah.
A lot of people are skeptical, but you know that goes without saying. It sounds pretty stupid. But the possibility of it being real is still scary as shit. I mean, poor guys, it basically is Men in Black happening. Yeah. You know, you get the flashy thingy.
They squirt you with rum. Go tell whoever you want to, rummy.
So what do you think of alien abductions? I mean, you hear stories about that all the time.
Well, we talked on our, I guess on our Aliens episode about so often I think that aliens are us. I think it's advanced technology that we're testing out. And I think there's a lot to be said for having an illegitimate victim to a crime that doesn't exist and nobody takes seriously. So, for example, if the government wants to find out if injecting you with, you know, roach poison affects you negatively somehow, what better way than to flash light in your eyes in the middle of the forest and kind of just, you know, scramble your senses? Then they can do whatever they want.
Right.
And there's nobody that's going to actually believe you.
Right.
So I think that there's, like, I always thought, and that I mentioned it before, and it's kind of a joke, but I always thought that, you know, all these kidnapped children, it's like, that's not perverts. That's the government building super soldiers. You know, they get them before they've actually formed true bonds or consciences, mm-hmm. Memories, any of that stuff. You yank them when they're babies, and you train the hell out of them and turn them all into a whole bunch of Ivan Dragos.
Right.
Then you can have secret missions, and you don't have to send letters home to families that, you know, tell them that they died in places they shouldn't have been in.
Right.
You know, you can have all kinds of assassins and super soldiers and shit like that. And I think that's a lot more plausible than aliens being like, I wonder what's in here. Especially once they look at a couple, I mean, we're all pretty much the same.
Yeah.
So
there's not a whole lot more you're going to learn.
Right. So, like,
we're not evolving that quickly.
Exactly. It's like, how many cows do you have to turn inside out? And I was reading some book not too long ago, and it's like, it's human. It was a podcast, actually. It's humans and aliens, and they're all kind of, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, well, which one of you wants to go? And he's like, well, I'll go because I'll blend better. And he's like, how you say? He's like, because I'm black. He's like, y'all are different colors? And he's like, yeah. And the guy, like, moves his goggles, and he's like, okay, if you say so. Like, y'all look the same to me. Like, shit don't matter to us. It's like, sure, do your thing.
Or me and my buddy Bart Landry. Love Bart to death. He lives out in Austin. He's a musician out there and all kind of other crazy stuff. But we would sit back in the pool in high school. Normally it was after smoking some weed. And we'd talk about, you know, what if aliens came down? Let's talk the different types of people they could pick up and what they would think of society. So we started just picking, you know, the jocks in school, different groups. And, you know, if they picked the wrong people, they could get a really screwed up idea of what American society is like, man.
Well, and I think, too, that's why they choose. And I don't want to say anything negative about rural America, because they get their asses handed to them in the media all the time. You know, basically, there's two states. It's New York City and Los Angeles,
right.
And everything else is just podunk.
Right.
So I don't want to, you know, but, yeah, you go to rural America where there's nothing around for miles and miles. So first of all, nobody can see you coming. Then you pull somebody and, you know, do your testing or whatever, and they're not a college professor. They're not a plausible witness. They're just some redneck who saw some lights in the sky. And lots of rednecks like to see lights in the sky and shoot at things. So therefore, it makes the plausibility even further.
Right.
So, you know, you have a pretty good pool of test subjects that you can pull from.
Yeah.
You know. So that's another, like I said before, in our aliens thing. You never have a spaceship just like swing out and land on Moscow and just be like, what's up, guys? You know, like, we need some beer and cigarettes and we'll be on our way. Like, they always go to rural areas where there's no visibility.
Right.
So
it reminds me of this old comedian from South Louisiana called Poo-Poo Broussard. And he did this thing where he would redo movies in, like, just occasion way. And there's one where he does E.T. And it starts off with a clip of the spaceship landing, and E.T. gets out, and he's walking around, and him and his friends are looking from behind a tree, and they've got a shotgun. And one of them goes, man, what's that? And he goes, I don't know, but go cook some rice. And he pulls his gun. Which is the kind of, you know, thing you'd expect from someone from that area.
Of course.
To happen. Well, somebody from Los Angeles would be there with a sign, flowers, and saying, hey, welcome to our planet.
Yeah. with all of your lasers and your ack-ack. Yeah, I was young when a lot of these were on, so some of the real-world adult things. But I do remember the one with the ATM. Like, ATMs at night have always given me a shudder because of it. I wrote this one down because it's apparently one of the more popular ones or one of the scarier ones. But basically, Matthew Chase moves to Los Angeles with a few friends. He goes missing, and the only clues to his whereabouts are left in a trail of ATM visits on the night of his disappearance. Let's see. Blah, 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 blah. When the story came out, it was missing person segment. Later, one of the updates was tagged in, showing that Matthew Chase's body was found shot to death. The pictures of the basically the bank activity, what he was doing was he was going to ATM to ATM, taking out more and more money.
Right.
And one of them shows it's a grainy shot of somebody standing right next to him.
Right.
So they caught the perpetrator on camera. Whoever it was that robbed and killed this guy. But apparently it was never solved.
Well, so many were never solved. Unsolved mysteries.
I gotta tell you though, whenever the updates used to come out, it used to disappoint me.
I know, because it took so much away from it. Yeah. Mysteriousness away from it. You know? Definitely made a big
update,
difference.
It was the butler. Damn it! I was totally on his side. It was not OJ. Yes, it was.
You know, one of the creepiest ones that I found. Well, say creepy. One of the just more horrific ones that I found was the case of these people. It was the Ellender murders, Ellender. And what happened with this is there were a group of these just really shitty anti-establishment. I hate to say skater kids, because not all skater kids are anti-establishment, but this particular group were. They called themselves the Skaters, which stood for the acronym Satan's Kids Against the Establishment, and the RS was apparently just added just to go ahead and just make them plural. Instead of just being skate, they wanted to be skaters.
So let me interrupt you. So when I was in high school, dude, I sat next to this kid. Me and I were friends. We weren't close friends. We were at school friends. But, you know, we had similar tastes in music, and we kind of dressed the same, and, you know. But he was kind of a troubled child, you know. Like, oh, shit, like 16, 15, 16 years old. But he's, you know, bad family, depression, alcoholic, and stuff. Anyway, he comes to school one day, and he's like, yo, check this out. He pulls up his sleeve, and he's got the word hate carved into his arm. And the H, A, and T are like really, really thick and deep. And then the E is kind of like scratched. Like, then I'm like, dude, what? You know, I knew what happened, but I was like, dude, what? He's like, yeah, right about the time I got to the T, it started to hurt really bad. He's like, but I wasn't going to walk around with the word hat carved into my arm for the rest of my life, so I had to do the E. He's like, I'm going to have to go back to a professional and have it done right. I'm like, dude, you're a dumbass. Anyway, skaters.
Yeah. Anyway, these guys decided that one night they're going to drop some acid and start tripping real hard. They decided to break into some couple's home, shoot them dead, and just left their infant child abandoned in the home by itself. So then they decided to step it up a notch. After they killed them, they decided to go ahead and host a drug-fueled party at the house they just killed the people in. They invited a whole bunch of friends. Bodies were hidden with the baby in one of the bedrooms. Then people allegedly discovered the bodies. They videotaped themselves pretty much molesting the bodies and everything. The couple's vehicle was found the next day being driven by a group of geniuses that were later implicated in the crime. The driver of the vehicle made a full confession stating that he enjoyed the murders very much and promptly committed suicide in jail. Cops considered it a closed case, but the murdered woman's parents continued to dig up accounts of sordid details of what happened in the house. And of course, they videotaped a whole bunch of it. Many people were implicated in the murders because they invited friends to come over and hang out and everything, and nobody called the cops. They just went ahead and partied with dead bodies and a parentless baby hanging out. A tape recorded confession from a girl who claimed to have witnessed the murders themselves and saved the baby from being killed, led to charges being filed, and later dropped against her. Three other people had been arrested and charged in conjunction with the crime, two as accessories and the other for second-degree murder. That's just insane, dude. That's the kind of stories that scare the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Because that shit could really happen, you know?
Exactly.
Let society collapse and people that can't provide for themselves and defend themselves, they're going to do whatever they can to survive. And that's the kind of marauding groups that you need to worry about.
Absolutely. Well, you want to get sort of terrified. Look at, like, I think something like 50-60% of the nation, not 50-60, maybe 40% of the nation is on some sort of mind-altering drug at any given moment. antidepressants, antipsychotics. Now you have some kind of glitch in the system that makes it to where they can't have their medicine, whether it's local, regional, whatever. You just watch it all start burning.
Right.
So people are already on edge. You know, people think of like the end of the world, or like not the end of the world, but they think of like a Walking Dead or an apocalyptic scenario. They're always thinking of themselves as the hero of their story, but they're not thinking about like you've only got a 2 weeks prescription for your medication that keeps you from seeing monsters. And if you can't get that medicine, you'll start seeing monsters.
Right.
Everywhere. And a lot of these drugs, like maintenance drugs, blood pressure medicine, statin drugs, like all that stuff, when the supply runs dry of that, people start killing over and dying.
Yeah.
You know, just falling over dead in the street because they can't get their medicines. It's not quite, somewhat Walking Dead, but it's not everybody against the roving hordes. It's just like mass chaos and dangerous. Like you have to be able to hole up in your house for months,
right?
Because shit like that'll happen,
but yeah,
they're not even aware of it. They're just running around doing shit,
right? And just to me, mental health is the biggest problem in this country. Mental health care is the biggest problem in this country today. Because it's, you know, with my ex-wife, she suffered from bipolar disorder and agoraphobia. So I went to a lot of her meetings she'd have, her group sessions she'd have. And I met a lot of schizophrenics and different types of people like that. And these are cats that, these are the guys that mix your paint at Home Depot.
Mm-hmm.
But when they're at home, the TV talks to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they can only function because of the medication they get. If they lose insurance and they can't get that medication anymore, it can be a bad thing.
Uh-huh.
You know, screw gun control. Mental health issues, to me, are far more important to take care of than that.
I think, too, so much of it is it's a body-mind disconnect, it's a social disconnect, and it's a dietary disconnect. I read something that's a funny meme. It's like the way people treat themselves these days, it's like they have 100% pure faith that medical science will be able to cure pretty much anything in their lifetime. Because you eat like crap, you know, you don't exercise, you don't do anything. All you do is, you know, basically sit around and worry about Donald Trump or something. And you're developing diabetes and high blood pressure and doing all this stuff. And, you know, I'm a little biased because I used to smoke a lot and I like to smoke. And I know that smoking is bad for you. But you have to run some numbers in your head and be like, well, at some point in the 50s, something like 65-70% of the population smoked a lot.
You smoke on TV. I watch old game shows all the time. They're smoking on TV.
You could smoke in restaurants. You could smoke in the doctor's office. The doctor could smoke during surgery if he wanted to. There were no limits to smoking whatsoever, and everybody did it. And cancer rates are higher now than they were then. So,
explain. Right.
So,
because I'm actually old enough to remember smoking in my office when I first stopped working offshore. We could still smoke in our offices in Halliburton.
Yeah, I did too.
That wasn't that long ago, you know. And all of a sudden, you know, it. But, like you said, what was different back then?
I think after World War II, you took all these in Korea. He took all these companies that were designing chemicals to drop on people and kill them, and they needed something to do with it, so they started putting it on the plants to kill the bugs.
Right. This one thing, DDT, as bad as it was excellent for farming. You know, when they did away with DDT and they started getting other options for insecticides, things got a lot worse.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, since we're talking on the issue of mental illness, let's talk about a batshit crazy person.
Let's do it.
Marie Hilly. Probably not familiar with the name. From the outside, she seemed like an awesome wife and mother, but she was really just a crazy asshole. She innocently took out hefty life insurance policies on her children and her husband that began to slowly poison them to death. Her attempt to poison her eldest son failed because he left for college before she could succeed. But she went ahead and doubled up efforts on her husband and finally got him dead. Collected the money. No one got suspicious that she had done it. They thought he just died of natural causes because, like I said, she just did it slowly. So she took the life insurance money and ran. Decided to go ahead and turn it to her younger daughter, took care of her. Got that money from her daughter. And then all of a sudden, it came up that it was arsenic poisoning. So she went ahead and just took off to Florida with all the money. She's hiding out there, and she was running around pretending that she was a wealthy widow with a brain tumor. Met somebody, remarried her. Remarried. This is where the crazy really kicks in. So she gets married to this guy, decides to go on a vacation, to go out of town. While she was out of town, that persona died, and her other wealthy twin sister showed up back in town and married her widowed husband. So she's on her second, her third personality at this point.
Wow.
So she marries that guy, and the guy fell for it, weird. And all of a sudden, the feds kind of got wind of where she was. I don't know how they picked up her trail, but they finally figured out it was her, and she finally got charged. And her second husband didn't know what the hell to think. He thought he was getting some strange, but it was actually just the same woman with pretending to be the twin sister.
So
crazy is that, dude?
That's weird.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm not me. I'm my sister.
Yeah. And this was a mother. This was a mother. Yeah, one more that I definitely want to talk about, because Robert Stack once referred to this as an absolutely bizarre story, which if Robert Stack is calling something a bizarre story, it's probably pretty damn bizarre. It's the story of Teresita Bassa, who was from the Philippines. Moved to the United States in 1960. She was a respiratory therapist. Very unassuming woman. She just lived a very simple life. But on the night of February 21st, 1977, the fire department was called to put out a fire in her home. In the blaze, they found her body under a burning mattress with a butcher knife buried in her chest. There was evidence that she had also been raped. The investigators believed the fire had been set to cover up the murder. The autopsy, however, determined that she had not been raped, even though they thought she was. There seemed to be no apparent motive for the crime. Investigators could also find little physical evidence as it had been destroyed by the fire. The one piece of evidence that was found, however, was a memo that stated, "Get theater tickets for 8S." So the police had a few leads. They were all dismissed, but they suspected that this AS person may have been involved in the crime, but they did not know what the initials stood for. More than 5 months after the murder, her co-worker, Remy Chua, another native from the Philippines, and her husband contacted the detective, claiming to have information about the murder. Remy told Joe that shortly after the murder, she began having visions and dreams in which Teresita appeared to her, begging her to go to the police and tell her what happened that night. One night, she took a nap at home, and according to Joe, she began speaking in another voice. It was as though she had been possessed by Teresita. She told Joe that her killer's name was Alan Shorey. The voice claimed that Shorey was an orderly that worked at the hospital. She urged Joe to go to the police. However, when Remy woke up, she claimed to have no memory of what had happened. She had totally been possessed and
wow.
Had no recollection. Then the voice possessed Remy a second time, asking Joe why he did not go to the police. Could you imagine your wife going to sleep and waking up as a different person with a different voice saying, "Why haven't you gone to the police yet?"
Right.
I'm going now. Let me get my keys. He said they had had no evidence against Shari. The voice then told Joe that Shari had taken Teresita's jewelry after the murder and given it to his girlfriend. So he went back to the detective. The detective didn't know if he could trust the information, but he decided to do a background check on Mr. Shari and found that he lived close to Teresita. The co-workers confirmed that Shari was planning to go to Teresita's apartment that night to repair her television. So they finally brought him in for questioning, confirmed that he went to her apartment to repair the television. He claimed that he did not have the tools to fix it, so he went back home. The detective didn't believe it, so he decided to go ahead and contact the guy's girlfriend, asked him if he had given her any jewelry recently, and sure enough, he had. So she brought it over to the police station. They confirmed that the jewelry was Teresita's, and he said that after he left it, finally he confessed. So that after he left her apartment, he made a plan to return and rob her. When he returned, he said that she let him back in. When she turned around and locked the door, he grabbed her from behind, attacked her, and killed her. So he disrobed her to make it look like she had been raped, took her to the bedroom mattress, set it on fire, and then left, trying to cover up the crime. But he would have got away with it.
But
had
she didn't, she told
a voice from the grave came back and said who it was. That's a crazy story.
Yeah.
That's the kind of shit on Unsolved Mysteries.
That I used to love that. Yeah, absolutely. Just
so for more information, if you guys want, look up Teresita Bassa and her story. She was in Chicago, Illinois, and like I said, it's like the movie Ghost. You know, she wasn't going to rest until her murder was solved. That's wild, man.
Totally. No, man, that's like, I remember on the different Unsolved Mysteries, it was the combination of the music, Robert Stack's voice, and things like that. It's just like, in a very matter-of-fact sort of deadpan way, it's like, this is one of the most bizarre things we've ever seen. It's like, you got one more?
Yeah, I got one for you.
All right.
The one which is a pretty wicked case, but it was an episode called The Arsonist.
Yeah, I was going to mention that one.
That's driving down the road, and you spot a video cassette on the side of the road. Say, hey, let me go ahead and pick up this VHS. I wonder what's on it. Just blank tape. The family gets home. They throw it in thinking they're going to see a movie or some home video or something. And this video of a house burning with somebody narrating it who had set the house on fire and was watching it burn as the people inside died. And what made this episode pretty crazy is they actually played the videotape, the actual tape of these people dying in this house. They don't just present it as the work of a demented arsonist, but as the work of a satanic demented arsonist. The guy was speaking in this deep Lucifer-like voice, and he was saying devil worship things while it was going on. They had an update. This is one of the ones where they came back with an update. The video wasn't part of the original segment. It was really just for some punk kids burned down an unoccupied home for kicks. So nobody actually died in the fire. It was just some kids that decided to make a video. They did burn a house down. They did commit a crime of arsony. But they
didn't kill
nobody. Nobody died. Right. But at the time that the thing was played, nobody knew what house it was that burned down. They didn't know where the videotape it came from. But it was the person narrating was saying that somebody was dying in the fire.
Yeah. Well, it's like confessing to a crime and then having it not be as bad as you think, but...
Right, but still a creepy story. I mean, I'd find something like that and freak the hell out.
Of course. You're talking about, like, found footage type stuff. I mean, that's all the rage in movies now. Is driving down the street and find a videotape. I'm like, no way. I'm not picking that up. I'm going to watch that. There's going to be a little girl climbing out of the TV. I don't want Robert Stack coming back from the grave to talk about how stupid I was for pulling over and picking up a VHS. Oh, man. We'll have to do a whole episode on it. But as we kind of get to the end of this one, Brian Sammons is a guy who I was doing the 80s podcast with Rick for a brief moment there. I'm going to try to, once I get out of my busy season, I'm going to try to bring that back. We've all agreed that we want to. They just have so many podcasts that they can't produce another one. I'm like, well, I can try to throw in on producing, like on the production side of it. But anyway, Brian posted a thing about the Geraldo episode about the Satanic Panic. Like, Geraldo did a special, a TV special about Satan worship and
stuff. Yeah, they came to my hometown for one segment.
And it's funny because you and I have talked about it, and it didn't really, like, I never put two and two together. But then I guess I was reading something for the show or whatever, but do you remember that kid in 1989? His name was Mark Kilroy. He's a spring breaker, and he got kidnapped in Matamoros, Mexico.
Okay.
And he was ritually sacrificed by a satanic Santeria cult.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's kind of the punctuation mark on the Satanic Panic, is that a spring breaker from U.S. got, you know, this guy was like a drug runner, and he was like a high priest of some satanic. So if you're not familiar, Santeria is an analog sort of to voodoo.
Yeah.
It's not the same, but it's similar. It's got more Christian elements than voodoo does, but it's also highly ritualistic or whatever. Well, a lot of this stuff, if you're not paying attention, it can go dark really fast, and this guy was a king of the dark side.
Mm-hmm.
And they kidnapped some kid off the street in Matamoros and killed him. They cut him up. When they found him, like, they found his skull in a pot with all kinds of sticks and bones and stuff. Google it. It's crazy.
I'll check that out.
The terrifying part is, if you look at a map of the United States, and you go all the way down to the tip of Texas, the Gulf Coast of Texas curves around, and right at the edge where the Gulf of Mexico meets basically the Rio Grande River is a little town called Brownsville, Texas.
Yeah, we used to go to Brownsville, jump across to Matamoros.
Matamoros is right across a bridge.
We walk.
You walk. We used to park at the mall and walk to Matamoros. When I was a kid, we'd go over there. The grown-ups would buy vanilla, and we'd watch the street performers, and we'd you know, it was like going to the fair.
Yeah.
And it was back then, northern Mexico was very touristy and very safe and very friendly. And then this happened, and Matamoros went on lockdown. And we were in Brownsville when it happened.
Oh, wow.
We were in Brownsville when they found him. Like, he had gone missing like a week or two before, but then we were there when they found him.
Mm-hmm.
And then the guy went crazy. He died in a shootout with the cops. Like, the guy who did it.
Yeah.
He was a high priest, and he had a high witch, and she got killed too. It's like all kinds of craziness. But yeah, I was there, and they're like, "Nope, we're not going to Matamoros." And I've never been since.
Really?
Yeah. That little, we joke about the Satanic Panic, but yeah, if you think Judas Priest and Ozzy Osbourne using some Celtic imagery in their album covers was satanic, you weren't in Brownsville.
Right. It's like,
it's pretty scary. But hey, man, I think that's going to put a fork in episode number 56 about Unsolved Mysteries.
For those of you unfamiliar with Unsolved Mysteries, check out some clips on YouTube, man. It was a great, great show. I think the phenomenal Robert Stack was the host the whole time I was growing up. And there's some cool stuff to see on there.
Yeah, it was good stuff. We got anything else? We gonna sign off? I'm gonna play the Unsolved Mysteries theme.
Sounds good to me. Give them a little taste.
All right, guys. Keep it scary.
Later.